It is 11 minutes on the dot. That's 2 this morning. After 7 a.m. here on a Wednesday. And this morning I am joined by Holmes Fire District 1 Chief Brian Rafferty. Welcome back. We're making this a nice monthly gig here, talking what's going on in not just the D1 community, but the entire fire community in our county. And so, you know, they all work pretty well together. And so, you know, what do we got for us today?
Well, we'll talk a little bit about what happened in the last month, and, you know, talking about working together. You know, Monday we had quite a busy day. We had Kilbuck had a structure fire just on the other side of the south side of the airport, and I think we went 3 alarms for that. There was quite a few departments there, and it was some extreme conditions on the side of a hill, and took a little bit of work, but got it done. And fortunately, everybody was okay there. And but yeah, it was definitely a team effort there on Monday.
Yeah, we heard the alarms, but we haven't heard any aftermath. So it's good to hear that everybody was okay.
Yep. We weren't sure at first, couldn't make contact with the residents there, and then the family finally got a hold of him, and fortunately he was safe and sound. And but yeah, it was a little tense moments there to start with. Like I said, it was, you know, house was down the side of a hill, and took a little bit of work to get there, but everybody working together, and like I said, there's quite a few departments, and got it done.
And with Holmes County, each district, each, you know, department has their challenges like that. And you guys train for things like that. So yeah, it's challenging, but you've done the training. You can go in calmly and, you know, knowledgeably to keep everybody safe, including you guys yourselves.
Yeah, I mean, just like this, you learn the textbook way and how it should work. If everything's, you know, nice and flat, and, you know, the house is
perfect, you know, fire conditions,
everything's perfect, and so you might as well throw that out the window. You know, around here, most places, it's, you know, we had to overcome, you know, truck wasn't working because it was on an extreme angle, and we were able to, you know, set something else up quick, and you just adapt and overcome, and you learn from it. You know, people there that may, you know, younger firefighters that may, they're still by the book, but then they see that and they're like, oh, there's another way to do it. You don't have to do it this one way. And that's just, you learn that over time, and you get experiences from other people, and that's what you have to do.
And experience is one of the best trainers that there is.
Yeah, sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad, but yeah, that's, like I said, fire and EMS, you learn, we always say, go learn it in the book, how to pass the test, and then when you come here to actually put it to work, you'll learn how it really goes. And, you know, it's not textbook, it's not how somebody in a big building somewhere in a city wrote it down and think that's how it's going to work for everybody. It's you have to learn on the job, and you know, hopefully it doesn't cause anybody harm. And but it's, like I said, it's mostly everybody's experiences, and that's what you learn from, is everybody's experienced something different or done it a different way, and you just take from that.
Because every home is different. Every person is different with their health needs, and there is no textbook with
no,
that.
No, definitely not.
So that's, like I said, that's good that everybody was safe. And so what else have you guys, how did April look for the department?
Well, I think we talked last month. March was very, very busy. April, we only had 90 calls. So everything kind of, it always equals out. When we have a lot of calls one month, you know, we'll be low the next month, which is good. That means somebody didn't need our services. So yeah, we were down about 90 calls, 67 were EMS, and then, you know, miscellaneous other things, fires, fire alarms, just service calls, lift assist, things like that. We installed smoke detectors in 3 homes. We were actually short on some smoke detectors for a while, which is a good thing. That means they're going out. So we got some more in, and are taking care of some more this month.
And those are free smoke alarms that you all install for you guys, the residents.
We get them free through Red Cross. Dave Crylo takes care of that for us in the county. I know he's listening, so I'd like to give him a shout out. And, you know, we get those in, we'll install them, tell you how it works, how to test them, do a little fire safety, you know, escape, how to escape and where to go, have a meeting place, all that, especially if you have kids. And we install those for free. And that's every department in the county, and I think even beyond that, most departments are able to get some.
You guys are one of the services, like you said, your calls were down, and that's a good thing. You're one service that is provided that you want your calls to be low. Like normally, you know, providing a service, you're waiting for those calls to come in. You guys are like, let's hope everybody has worked on their safety and, you know, doing good practices so we don't get called.
Yep. That's the best time is when our residents don't need our services. That means everything, they're not sick, injured. Something's not burning, it's a good thing.
And speaking of burning, we do still have the burn ban. It is May, and it goes through the end of the month.
Yep. We're out of that. You know, it's not, we're not having the issues like we did there in March. You know, everything's kind of greened up. We're definitely a lot wetter now, so we're not seeing that quite as much, but we want to kind of continue that till the end of the month. And I know everybody thinks summer is hotter and drier, but that's, you know, everything's greener. We don't have the low humidity like we did in March that just dries everything out and burns like crazy. So we're kind of out of that danger zone, I think, right now.
I was gonna say, I think we've heard we haven't really heard any things for that. So that's good.
Yeah. Another thing for toward the end of April, one of our lieutenants, Ryan Peterman, got his credentialing through the Ohio Fire Chiefs Association, so he's now an Ohio Fire Officer. He can use OFO after his name. And it just, it's through them. They have Ohio Fire Officer, they have an Ohio Fire Chief credentialing. And it's just taking your education, your experience, kind of putting that all together in an application. You get letters of recommendation. And just compile all this, and it goes down to the Ohio Fire Chiefs Association, and there's a group there that review them and see if it meets the qualifications, and then they approve it to approve that credentialing. And so that's something we've been working on the last couple of years, is trying to, you know, rebuild our fire officer group, provide that training, officer training, you know, beyond how to put out fires, how to do the, you know, the basic things that you learn in fire school or EMS school. It's how to, you know, run a fire scene or an EMS scene, or how to lead, you know, run a crew and be able to provide that just either on the scene or even at the station, just advancing those skills and building our officer corps and getting that further education. So that's just part of it. We want to work to get a lot of our officers through that credentialing. So congratulations to Lieutenant Peterman on achieving that. It's a big deal.
Now, is he the only one right now, or do you have others?
Right now, for our officers, yes. We have some part-time members that have this credentialing through their other departments where they may be an officer. They have this, but as far as our officers at District 1, he's the only one right now.
And that's how you guys can work. You know, we started off talking about working together by having that training. You have to run when something's happening, you have to have some level of steps and in charge. And it's not, the chaos does not allow for working well together. Somebody has to, you know, establish leadership and say, here we go, and create that partnership and ability to everybody, your own department guys and others together.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, talked about that fire Monday. That was in Kilbuck Township. Chief Clemens was in charge there. He was down at the fire scene. I was at the top of the hill. You couldn't even see the fire scene from where we were. And I was in charge of the water supply and tankers coming in, bringing in water. And then we just communicated, hey, this is what I have up here, or whatever he needs down there, I can send it down or whatever. So it's, we know we're on the same page, and he knows what I'm talking about when I call him on the radio, and, you know, vice versa. So, and that's, you know, that was always, as I became an officer, the hardest part for me is you have to stay out of doing the work. You have to stand back and direct people. And I want to be in there doing the work. And that's a big part of, as you work up through being an officer, is you got to stand back and take charge and direct people and tell people what to do and where to go. And that's probably been my hardest thing, is just not getting involved and not doing the work myself, is just standing back. And that's what makes it work better. If you have officers in place and they can direct, they can keep an eye on everybody, keep everybody safe, and look at that big picture of what's going on. Because when you are in there working, you're focused on what's right in front of you, and you may not see what's going on around you, that something's becoming dangerous above you, around you. And having those officers in place of just
that extra set of eyes.
Exactly. Yep. So yeah, it's a big part of it. And I think we all work together around here very well.
So, you know, while you may not be in it and doing the work, you are doing important work. You know, a lot of times we joke about somebody just watching the guys do the work in your line of business. Super, super, super important. You've got to have those eyes.
Yeah. And you got to be, you know, 3-4 steps ahead of whatever's going on now. You got to be thinking, okay, I need this thing next, or we'll have to focus on this next. So it's not only what's going on now, but what's coming in the next 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you know, an hour down the line. If it's getting, you know, the power company there to secure power, it's getting Red Cross there to take care of the people affected by a fire, or on down, you got to be thinking of that as you're dealing with whatever's burning right in front of you. So yeah,
that's, or 5 different scenarios. Okay, if this happens, we got to have this. If this happens, have this ready. If this,
or just like we said, you know, the fire truck there, it was struggling because of the condition where it was setting, and we had to, you know, you can't sit there and figure it out, like, what do we do now? It's, hey, we can, this is our next option, and you just do it. And a lot of that stuff happens even before, you know, we do a lot of what we call pre-planning, and that's, you know, that's looking at buildings and knowing, hey, this is an issue here, or if we had a fire here, you know, they store this kind of chemical or a lot of this, or they have, you know, if it's a mechanics, they may have a pit in the garage. You got to think about that. You're not walking in there and falling in, or, you know, and pre-planning starts, you know, long before. You're thinking about weather. You're thinking about, is it a holiday and maybe not a lot of people aren't around. So you're always thinking of that stuff.
So you guys kind of like drive around and kind of take a little evaluation of your coverage area to kind of have an idea. Oh, like if we ever have something here, you know, we need to have a plan for this, or there is a huge mountainous, you know, cliff and there's 5 houses here that we may have to reach someday. Or is it just like, here's what we can do if we have these situations, and just kind of, oh, hey, look, we had this.
Yeah. I mean, we have, you know, we call them box alarms. If there is a fire, you know, in certain geographical area, it's already pre-planned to what other departments are automatically dispatched to that location. We know if it's, you know, we have more resources for anything in the village of Millersburg. If it's downtown, obviously we've got bigger buildings and buildings right on top of each other. So we're calling in, you know, more aerial trucks, things like that. So yeah, and we often will go to an area and just walk around a building, especially downtown Millersburg. If you walk Jackson Street, walk the alleys behind the buildings, and you see just what all is back there and the different doorways and steps and all the power lines run back there. And you think about that stuff ahead of time. And that's where, you know, that's when we're not making calls, that's the kind of stuff we're doing. Is even if it's just setting, you know, today, now you can get on Google Maps and pretty much walk down a street without leaving the station. We can pull that up on a big screen TV and walk through downtown Millersburg, and you can look at buildings and say, oh, there's our hydrant, or there's this, or we wouldn't be able to get that truck there. You know, you think about that stuff ahead of time.
And fire did take out part of Millersburg back in the 1800s, if I remember correctly from my video. Exactly. Yes. So they were then, after the big fire, they were required to keep a certain amount of buckets of water and a ladder by their buildings in case of a fire.
You read any history of a fire department, it always starts with some great fire in their downtown, and everybody gets a bucket, and they're required to have a ladder that reaches the highest floor of the tallest building, something like that. And yeah, that all started, you know, 1800s, and I think the town marshal was like the first fire chief, and you have, you just have that set up, and that's how it all starts.
All right, we're going to take a quick little break here. We've got more throughout the 7 a.m. hour with Chief Rafferty. We've got ABC News coming up and Hometown Sports as well. But like I said, we're going to take a little break here on WKLM. And we are back in the second half of your 7 a.m. hour. I am with Chief Brian Rafferty from the Holmes Fire District 1. And I mentioned before ABC News that we're going to talk EMS week.
Yeah. EMS week is May 18th through the 24th. It's the 51st year for EMS week. So first I want to give a little shout out to Nurses Week. Was last week. Well, it was Tuesday, May 6th through Monday, May 12th. And I was like, who comes up with a celebration week that starts on a Tuesday and ends on a Monday? But then I thought, it probably
EMS
goes, that's Nurses Week, so that goes by their schedule, because they're always like, you know, on a Wednesday they say, well, today's my Friday or today's my Monday or whatever. So it's probably by nurses' schedule, but obviously a big shout out to them. And you know, we work a lot with our ER nurses at Pomerene. They do a lot for us. You know, when we call in with a patient and we're, you know, going down the road and we're just, you know, yelling the little bit of information we have, they run with that and help us when we get there. And then they'll do a lot training. They'll come in and do CE hours for us in the evenings. So we really appreciate all that they do for us. And but yeah, next week is EMS week. So then they usually have treats for us sitting at the ER on the way out. And
nice.
We appreciate that. And, you know, EMS, like I said, it's 51st year. President Ford was the one that started it in the late 70s. And I think, you know, I was looking back through the history of EMS, and you think about EMS, the system you see today or whatever, hasn't been around long.
No.
And I think I say that because I was born in the 70s, so I want to say it hasn't been around that long. But, you know, modern EMS really didn't get started till mid-70s, you know, really into the 80s. And, you know, it used to be, you know, it kind of started Civil War, wartime stuff, you know, of treating, you know, soldiers out in the field. That was kind of the first, if you want to call it, an ambulance service, and treating out in the field. And then it, you know, kind of evolved through there. I did see Cincinnati was the first organized EMS, I believe, Cincinnati, it started in 1865, established the first civilian ambulance service. You know, then 1928 started kind of a rural volunteer service in Roanoke. They called them like life-saving or first aid crews, is what they were called. You know, and then again, 30s, 40s, 50s, it was mostly, you know, they talk about fire departments, hospitals, funeral homes, towing companies. That's who was your ambulance service.
In the hearses to the hospital.
That was, you know, 50s, it was 50s to the 60s, it was the funeral home that took you to the hospital, and the focus was on transport. It wasn't treating. You weren't doing any treatment out in the field. It was load you up and go to the hospital. And I guess if you didn't make it, you were already loaded up.
That had to be unnerving.
Yeah. So it's really evolved from there. And there, you know, late 60s, there was a study done that came out. It was called The Accidental Death and Disability, The Neglected Disease of Modern Society. And that's when it really changed from just transport, just drive somebody to the hospital, to more of treating out in the field and doing all those steps to stabilize somebody before transporting. Then it just, you know, it grew from there through the 70s. And I know a lot of people give credit to the TV show Emergency that really kind of put it in everybody's homes of seeing, oh, you know, these guys can show up in a fire truck and do a lot of stuff out on the roadway or in somebody's home before they go to the hospital. And I think that's really what progressed it, you know, through that era.
It's one of those times where we can actually say, hey, good job, TV show.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously that's from what it was you know, in the 80s of where you get a van and load some equipment in there and you had a cot. And today, you know, we're doing so much in an ambulance, and the equipment that we carry, it's very expensive, and it takes a lot of care, but it's amazing what can be done. And, you know, you look down at Sugar Creek now, they're starting with carrying blood and being able to do blood out in the field. That's just, it's crazy to think of how far it's progressed.
Well, the guys and gals on your EMS trucks, some of them, their training is only a few credentials away from being classified as a nurse.
Yeah.
In some situations,
you know, I mean, we hit, there's several levels in Ohio as far as training. EMT, you kind of hear that's kind of the basic term, but there's, you know, EMT basic, that's where you start out. That's about 150 hour class, kind of varies wherever you go, but that's giving you the foundation of everything, of basic life saving, you know, CPR. There's a few medications, you know, and that's starting to progress a little more, of medications that an EMT basic can give, you know, obviously oxygen, they can do Narcan, they can do, you know, now it's moved up to where they can give breathing treatments, on the scene, and, Epi for an allergic reaction. That's something that's came in the last couple of years. So they're allowing EMTs to do a little bit more. But that's the majority of what you're going to see for EMS. That's where you start out. Then it goes from there to what's called an advanced EMT. Now, they can do a lot more. They're going to start IVs. They can give pain meds, some other, you know, some other medications that you can't as a basic. And then that's another 200 to 300 hours of classroom. And
on top of?
Yeah, on top of the basic EMT. And they're doing a little more in-hospital, clinical hours out on at a fire department running EMS and getting those skills. And then you go up to paramedic. That's another 600 hours of classroom and over 400 hours of clinical time. That's
on top of the other two.
On top, yeah. Well,
or does that count?
You don't have
middle?
You can go from EMT to paramedic.
Okay,
yes. But it's pretty much a year of your life is dedicated to classroom and clinicals. And right now we have two of our full-time members are in paramedic class. We have a part-time member who's also on in Dundee. He's in paramedic class. But it's a year of your life. And a lot of you're getting, I mean, everything that a nurse, even a doctor, I mean, you're learning to diagnose heart attacks out in the field by an EKG, you know, on a little machine that we carry in the truck, and starting treatment for that. Obviously, you know, signs of stroke. And then we get, you know, obviously we're doing advanced things like starting IVs and doing blood draws and giving medications through that. The down and dirty stuff of doing a needle decompression, if you have, you know, collapsed lung, that's a paramedic skill. A surgical, I'm not going to give you the whole word, it's surgical crike. It's a big, long medical term, but that's, you know, if your airway is compromised, we can actually do an incision in your throat and give you an advanced airway. Never done it yet. Hope I never have to. But that's the stuff we're learning to do out in the field. That's in your living room on the side of a road. And, you know, as far as, you know, giving those medications, you know, we're talking about pain medications, cardiac medications, and that's already approved where, you know, in a hospital, a nurse will get that approval from a doctor to give that medication. We've essentially already got that pre-approved that if we see this condition or they need this, we're given that medication. We're given, you know, strong pain medications, we're given serious cardiac medications, and we're making that decision in the field. We've already got that permission. So we're doing pretty much what they, you know, same with CPR. Anymore now, we're going to stay on scene for, if we have to, for 30 minutes, 45 minutes doing CPR. It's not the, let's get them on the cot and go. It's we can do everything that they're going to do in the ER in your living room or wherever, And that's what's going to make the difference, is doing it now and not taking that time to load, where you're not getting chest compressions, you're not getting ventilated while we're doing all this moving and moving you.
I mean, it's not like in the movies where they're on top of the person, like doing while you're pushing the cart.
No, somebody has to lift that cot up, and adding another person isn't going to help. So we're going to do everything right there as long as we can before we start moving toward a hospital. So it has come a long way from what it used to be.
So if you're considering a job in the medical field, but you don't want to work in a hospital.
I don't know if I sold it much there, but
talk to Chief Rafferty about becoming an EMT and then a paramedic and all that jam for a fire department.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, we've Jason Troyer, you know, EMA director, he's also an advanced EMT, teaches EMT in advance. We can offer those type of classes local. Paramedic, you kind of have to go. That's got to be through a hospital. We do have that a little bit closer now. I took mine at Altman. I had to go to Altman Hospital twice a week for class, and then all my clinicals were usually at Altman or at a fire department in Stark, Summit County. But now we have that went through University of Akron in Wayne County. So they're going there. We have so many paramedic students that do ride time with us, a District 1 EMT students. So that, you know, they're coming in there and doing their ride time, trying to get their skills there. But, you know, other departments they go to. But like I was saying, Jason Troyer is teaching those EMT basic advanced classes here in Holmes County. It's closer. It's a little easier for people that have full-time jobs. I mean, that's how I did it, was a full-time job and went in the evening, took the classes, and he does an excellent job with those. And you can get those a little bit closer to home now.
And so if you see somebody who you know is in the EMS service, give them a thank next week for her EMS week.
Yeah, I mean,
bring them snacks.
We wouldn't mind any other day, but next week, sure, that's fine.
Specifically, yeah. A big extra thank you. You know, we appreciate all of our first responders here, whether it's fire, EMS, police, and, you know, we always try to be very grateful for that. And I think our community is pretty good with our first responders as well around here.
Definitely. Yeah, they know it's a major part of, you know, the community and is needed. And, you know, especially then when they do call it, they get another appreciation for it. So, yeah, we definitely have, you know, great support here in Holmes County.
And they will not turn down snacks next week.
No, no. We try to stay fit, so just, you know, but... Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to check in with a quick version of Hometown Sports, and we'll wrap up with some events coming up here in the county.
Yes, just a couple.
All right. We'll be back with Hometown Sports on WKLM. And we are back for our last time here with Holmes Fire District 1 Chief Brian Rafferty. And we were talking a lot about EMS Week, and, you know, it is not a cheap endeavor to get involved in.
No. And I think, you know, I just had a few things just to let people know kind of what it costs your fire department to operate EMS. We do bill for EMS transports. So if we come out and we, you know, check you out, whatever, do vitals, there's no charge for that. But transporting to the hospital and providing any treatment, everything that is billed through health insurance, whatever, just like it would be for the hospital. But just kind of go over, these aren't exact numbers, but, you know, we just purchased a new ambulance, went in service last year, last spring, and that cost $325,000 for an ambulance. Now that's, you know, that includes the truck, you know, which we had to buy the truck at Village Motors. They couldn't even get, you know, the ambulance makers can't even get the chassis anymore or have a hard time. So we were able to buy that at Village Motors. And then we had it built down in Columbus. And then it also, that includes, now you're required to have that power load system. That's for the cot. So it used to be we always had to lift the cot with everybody's weight on it, and it took two people. Now the cot, you know, lifts itself, goes in. There's arms on there that pick the cot up. It's a lot safer for us. But that, now those are regulated that they have to be in anything new. And that's $50,000 just for that system. the life packs that we have, the heart monitors that we do blood pressure, that we do EKGs with. It's also an AED, so if we have to shock somebody, that's all in the same unit. Those today run $45,000 to $55,000, and we have three ambulances, so we have one on each ambulance, and they seem like they're kind of like the cell phone makers. They decide we're done servicing those. We're not going to make parts for them anymore. So now you got to buy the new one. And, you know, we're 12, 15 years into our current units that we have, but they're starting to say, oh, we're going to stop making parts for those. We're going to stop servicing those. So now you got to start thinking about buying the next one. So right now we have a grant in that we're hoping to replace all those. Just 2024, just in EMS supplies, that's bandages, ice packs, just the disposable stuff that we use on EMS calls. You know, we spent just under $10,000 just for those. Oxygen. Yeah, we have to pay for oxygen in the tanks. That's just under $5,000 for oxygen we spent last year. And then we have, you know, we talk about all that equipment. Well, everything and anything medical, fire service, you got to have a preventative maintenance and make sure somebody certified checks that every year that it works and it's calibrated and everything's good. You know, that's $15,000 for that cot, that power load, the CPR, the mechanical CPR machine, the life pack. All that stuff has to have preventative maintenance and annually inspected every year. And we have to pay for all that. And then obviously we have our costs for the billing and records retention and our reporting software. All this, we have to report, everything's a medical record. It's got to go to the state. It's got to go to billing. If you're in an accident, you know, an attorney's going to call for those records, or if it's subpoenaed to court, all that's got to be taken care of. And, you know, there's costs to that. So it adds up, and that's all coming out of that money that we bill for. And through some of our levies, the levies are paying for, you know, the truck and the fuel and the maintenance. And then that money that we use for billing, that's all the supplies and the equipment and things like that. And the training, you know, we talked about training, all that costs money. To go to paramedic school, it's $6,000 to $8,000 for each person. So yeah, unfortunately that's where I know everybody's costs go up, but ours do too. So it seems like if it's for fire and EMS, it's even more than anything else.
Because they know they can.
Yes. And there's only a few manufacturers, and they all own everything else. And so, yeah, they kind of have the monopoly.
And you said there was, you wanted to talk a moment about Stop the Bleed.
So, yeah, through EMS week, each day has a theme. And Thursday they're talking about Stop the Bleed, the Stop the Bleed program. You know, and that's a training class that people can take just to show bleeding control, because, you know, an average time to bleed out from a serious injury is 3 to 5 minutes. Average time for first responders to arrive could be up to 7 to 10 minutes. Well, those don't add up real well.
Those are no matter. One of these things is not like the other.
No. So, you know, and trauma-related deaths worldwide due to bleeding is 40%. So it kind of follows along with trying to teach people how to do CPR. It's that you're the first responder on the scene if you're there, and you can do these a few things to help stop the bleeding, slow the bleeding, and be able to recognize that kind of stuff that you can start the process before we get there. So those programs are available. You know, CPR training, stop the bleed, and even if a business or whoever they want to learn how to do CPR, how to use an AED, if they don't want to do the full program and get the card, they're nervous about it, they're afraid to take the class, they don't want to do the test, like, we'll show you, we'll do a basic, this is how you do chest compressions, this is how you use an AED that's maybe in your business. And just to get that fear out of them of doing CPR and that they're going to do more damage than good, or they're afraid to, or I don't want to do mouth to mouth. Well, you don't have to do mouth to mouth.
I say that's kind of gone the wayside, yeah, these days.
So we'll show you how to just do chest compression. That's the big part of it. And how to use that AED. That's a major part of it. And same with stop the bleed. We can do a very basic class on how to do that, what to recognize, you know, what what to do, how to use a tourniquet. You know, that was always a scary thing. Now that's not out of the norm like it used to be. So we can do those, you know, real quick and easy. You don't have to do the full class. If you know, we would recommend that, but if that's what's holding you back from learning how to do CPR, like, don't be afraid to reach out, and we can show, like I said, we will go to a business, wherever, and show you how to use those tools that you probably, like I said, they may have an AED hanging there and nobody knows how to use it, or they're afraid to use it. So we want to get rid of that.
So just call your guys' fire department, yep. Your local fire department, yep. And somebody will be able to help you.
Yes.
Speaking of local departments, We got some ones that are doing some things.
Yep, a couple things. East Holmes Fire has their fish fry this Friday, May 16th, 4 to 8 p.m. Like we talked, you may want to get there early, get in line. It's usually pretty busy. In Winesburg, Essene has a chicken barbecue on Saturday starting at 3:30 p.m. So check those.
Sounds
check
like those meal plan, yep. Without cooking.
Definitely.
Best kind of meals.
For sure.
So if you have any questions about becoming an EMT, becoming a firefighter, having one of those training classes, you can reach out to District 1, your local fire department, and you guys will all be very happy to help.
Definitely. Everybody needs more. There's, like I said, there's always people retiring or getting out of it. So we want to get young ones in and get them started. And if you do it and you realize, oh, the fire service isn't my thing, learning basic EMT, and that's a skill the rest of your life that is
usable.
Yeah. It's nothing that is,
it's not like learning trigonometry and, you know, finding
right.
the square
used
root
that
of a
yet, so.
Yeah, exactly. sorry math teachers, yeah. Out there, I'm sorry, Mr. Pym, I promise
I shouldn't say that. When you go to paramedic school, you gotta learn some med math and all, you know, there's stuff with x equals this, and I'm like, oh, that is real life. Okay.
Whoops. That is why I am not in the medical service. All right. Well, thank you so much. That was Chief Brian Rafferty from Holmes Fire District 1. We're going to take a quick second and be back with Hometown News.